Avellino!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. Danny O'Neill's in for Brock today. Hi, Danny.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. It's good to have you in. It's going to be a wild show. We're going to have Brock at 8:30 for Washington Wednesday. We're going to have Jake Heaps in for the 9 o'clock hour to talk through the film on Russ and Jake Browning and everything else. Matt Stretch Johnson, Answer the Question Jerk Insider, coming in at 4, Answer the Question. It's a big day. It's a big day.
We're also recovering from a turbulent Monday.
It's been a turbulent couple of days.
It was a turbulent Tuesday.
Yeah.
Because it was following the Monday game. So we were already off to begin with. And there's a little bit of unrest.
There's a lot of unrest. And what I've been trying to figure out for the last 24 hours or so is why Monday's game bothered me as much as it did. Because, I mean, Lydia can attest. We've talked about this. We just talked about it a few minutes ago. And I think a lot of people went into this season with lowered expectations. Kind of a renewed sense of, we'll see what happens here. Like, you know, there's not as much urgency, and if they win, it's going to be great, and if they don't win, like, all right, it's not going to matter as much as it has the last few years because of the pressure that they've put on themselves with their talk and the dynasty and everything else that was sort of at stake. And now it's like, all right, I can kind of view this through a little bit more of an open-minded lens. And yet, and that's sort of how I felt after Denver. Like, okay, well, they lost, but, you know, there were some good things, some bad things, see where it goes. For whatever reason, the way things went on Monday, like, changed a lot of that, because I think maybe they were just so concerning that you're like, wait, hold on. I didn't sign up for this, did I?
There's two things that
especially
happened.
Especially offensively.
The first, I think it was almost entirely offensive.
Right.
Their defense was okay. Like, it wasn't great, and I don't want to get too carried away. Hey, their defense, especially given the personnel shortages, their defense was okay. The offense, the extended impotence, like 5 straight drives resulting in punts to start the game, that was as bad as they've looked. And they've looked bad in plenty of games. But that was as bad as they've looked for as long a period of time. It was tough to find anything good there. Combine that with the confusing parts of it. The entirely abandoning the run, going 17 minutes without handing the ball off, and the disappearance of Chris Carson. And then you hear the explanations later, and it doesn't all wash.
Yeah, so let me walk through a little of that, because what I generally tend to find is that the next day, after a loss, Brock and I get an opportunity to sit down with Pete, and afterwards, I feel a little bit better. He's convincing often, and I know there are people out there who think that he's just sort of whitewashing the losses, but there are moments where I'm like, all right, I could see it like that. Like, oh, okay, now that I understand your thought process, where he can kind of, you know, take some things that you think are going to be the end of the world and turn them into, yeah, that didn't go right, but here's how you fix it, and you move on. You're like, yeah, all right, I guess he's right about that, and you kind of feel a little better. And some of that happened for me yesterday, so that I feel better today than I did when the day started.
What do you
started.
Feel better about, Mike?
Just sort of in general. Like, you know, when he talks about kind of where they're at and what they're doing, just like, I don't know, I can't give you a specific, but he kind of presents a sense of confidence. It's one of Pete's great strengths, I think. The two things that just don't still truly make sense, as you said, were the disappearance of Carson and what the heck happened in the third quarter. And he had explanations. I'm just not sure they fully make sense. So let's start with what happened in the third quarter, okay? So Pete says that in the third quarter, that it was on him more than it was on offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. Here's what he said.
Yeah, I wanted to get up top. I wanted to get a shot. I didn't want to, we didn't want to have to miss them all, you know, at all. But, yeah, I did. I got in the shot and I said, you know, let's see if, you know, we looked at the corners in the first half. We'd seen how they're playing. We just want to take a shot at them. And sure enough, the first time they roll right into it. And so they lucked out a little bit. But I'm just telling you, I did play a role in that.
Here's what I think he's saying. They came in at halftime and they're like, they're bunched up on us. They're jamming us at the line. We need to make them pay for it. Take some shots down the field. Brian Schottenheimer is new to working with Pete, and he's new to working with Russ. And I think the way he executed that and the way that they went about, and maybe the frequency with which they targeted it, he probably didn't do it the way Pete wanted it. Pete did not have the intention of throwing 6 straight passes in the third quarter. That's how it came out.
I would tend to agree. I think that's basically what occurred. As Pete said, hey, let's take a shot. Schottenheimer turned that into let's take six shots, and that's not necessarily
we got to throw to get him off of us. Let's stop running into the brick wall.
I don't know. The thing is, they weren't running into a brick wall. They were actually having some success doing it. So I don't know why they would have needed to do all of that. But all right, fine. I also can buy the fact that, you know, hey, it sounds like you ran into a Tecmo Bowl situation.
Yeah, let's also go back, though, because the idea that they were having some success running it, they weren't getting first downs. Like they weren't.
Well, they weren't running it three times in a row to try.
Well, they ran it three times in a row to start the game, but they went
with a first down.
They went five straight possessions that ended in a punt. So it's not like they abandoned a successful offense.
No, but
strategy.
They would get to third and two, and then not even threaten the running game at that point. I mean, there were some mistakes I thought in play calling even leading up to that.
They should have gone for it on fourth down, but the idea that they had been successfully running the ball before that is not true.
They Pete's argument here essentially is that they got Tecmo Bowled. That, yeah, you know what, we called a shot and they called the exact same shot, and so they rolled the coverage right to what we were doing. Bad luck, what are you gonna do? They figured it out. And I guess that like that's one of the types of things Pete says that generally makes me feel better. Like, oh, okay, like that happens. But I guess there's that other part of me that's like, A, the play caller, like a good play caller that doesn't happen to because they've got a great sense of the rhythm, it's just innate within them. And generally, the great elite quarterbacks see that before the play starts, change out of it, and have another backup plan that they execute. So I don't know that I'm fully buying any of those answers. The other is on Chris Carson. And this is still really confusing. Pete brought it up before we even talked about it yesterday.
I make mistakes. You know, I misread a little bit of something happened. I was off on the thing I said about Chris about that. He was on special teams a couple of plays, but I thought that's what happened, and I just misread him on the sidelines a little bit and didn't clearly understand. And so, you know, I just want to give Rashad a chance to go play. And when he did, and then Chris never really gets back in the game, it feels like, what, did you bench him or something? That didn't happen. It just was the way the things turned, and so I miss it a little bit.
Do you understand now?
No! All right, well, I don't understand any of it.
Well, how about now?
Can we come back to the Carson thing? I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So
I just looked at him on the side. He looked like he was kind of worn down a little bit. And I knew that he was a factor in special teams, and I just missed it. He wasn't – Brian had taken him off on a couple things, and so because he was running the ball well. So, right. I just missed it. And I thought that's what happened when I looked at him. But it wasn't like to bench him. It wasn't like I was disappointed with him. And it just – the plays came on. We still wanted to see the other guys too and mix them in, and that's just the way it went. You know, and so it I didn't read it right. And when I commented about that, I wasn't clear.
It still wasn't clear. Here's the thing. What does Bill Belichick do when he's asked a question that he does not want to answer transparently?
We played the guys that we wanted to play. We played the best guys for the situation. That's Bill's answer to this. Oh, we played the best guys for the situation.
Now, that
we gave us the guys that we thought would... We played the guys we thought would give us the best chance to win.
That's a choice, right? That's a tactic that a coach uses to be deliberately...
Obtuse.
Opaque. You don't want people to see what's going on.
Yeah.
What does Pete do when he's asked a question he does not want to answer transparently? He crams a bunch of words into a really condensed period of time.
It's the opposite.
And it's about eight half sentences crammed together in 15 seconds. And you get through to the end of it, and after 9 years of transcribing Pete Carroll press conferences, like I can tell you, there's an acceleration of tempo, and more words get crammed in there, and more commas, and there's no period. You can't find a period in any of the statements because there's nothing, there's no completed thought that goes in there.
I will allow for the fact that
fantastic analysis.
That Pete's taking responsibility here. He's putting the blame on him, and he does not want to tell us what happened.
That's correct.
And that is okay. He has every right to do that as a coach. I respect it. It's probably the right thing to do. Ask any baseball manager. But you're going to have a hard time convincing me that something didn't happen on the sidelines or in the game involving Chris Carson to cause this. Something serious enough for Pete to bench him, but not serious enough to let the public know what it was. Like that's the only real answer I can come up with. And whatever it is, I just hope they can get past it enough because he's their best running back and they kind of need him to go out there and run the ball.
I flirted with this idea last night of becoming a truther. Like a Chris Carson was gassed truther. And just like, yeah, he was just tired. That's truly what happened. Even though
he was just tired. Oh, the two plays that he was in on special teams.
That's
clearly wore him down.
Not what happened.
You should do that, Danny. Being a truther works for a lot of people these days. 7:10.
Carson was gassed.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, you just heard it. We sat down with Pete Carroll at Seahawks headquarters yesterday. He's still a little confused, and everyone is confused about what happened with Chris Carson in the second half. Said that Russell Wilson was over trying, and also the good news, Bobby and KJ could return this week. Bobby, probably more likely at this point than KJ Wright. Look, overall, I think these things that have happened with the Seahawks and maybe some of the muddled confusion with third quarter play calling or perhaps what happened with Chris Carson, these are isolated incidents. And they may very well be part of that getting to know you process between Pete and Schottenheimer and throw Russell Wilson in there as well. And if they beat Dallas and then hopefully Arizona, who's terrible, we may forget about all of these things. They'll be 2-2 and they'll have an opportunity at that point to grow. But I hope so. Because if that sideline and locker room is messier than we're accustomed to seeing, which is what it looks like right now, that's going to be a real challenge for Pete Carroll to clean up.
They've got a lot of growth to do. And I think instead of looking at this team as, oh my gosh, they haven't gotten far enough, I'll look at it and say they've got a lot of work ahead of them. And this really is two games into a new offense and the quarterback becoming comfortable with that and the coordinator understanding his coach and the coordinator understanding his quarterback. And I don't know if they're going to catch up in time to be competitive this season. I hope so. But I'm troubled by where that offense stands right now because I don't think that was a very good Chicago team that they just played. And they looked really bad for an extended period of time.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Mariners lost to the Astros 7-0 in Houston. Rubber match of that series is tonight at 5 with Rowenis Elias on the mound.
The Mariners were officially eliminated from winning the division. The bubbles stopped coming up. Yep. Officially, mathematically eliminated, they can no longer win the American League West.
That means we're getting closer and closer to them being eliminated from the wild card, and I can start talking about them again.
You won't speak about them until the actual elimination comes?
I don't think it's fair for me to start speaking what I truly feel, because I think some words may come out that are inappropriate for the radio.
Now, one of the things that when the Seahawks were playing the Packers in that NFC Championship game, there was a security guard out there who said he decided that he was going to watch it to the bitter end because they'd earned the right for him to watch until every last bubble started coming up. So maybe that's like you with the Mariners. You're waiting and watching until the last bubble.
I'll tell you
comes
what,
up.
Man. I watched my new favorite team. Did I tell you I adopted a National League team? The Brewers. No, I adopted the Colorado Rockies, for the stretch run. Team. Yeah, and do you know what happened to them last night? They lost on a walk-off home run. You want to know who hit it? Chris Taylor. Thanks a lot.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Jason Gesser resigned yesterday as an assistant athletic director at Washington State University. The decision came just hours before the spokesman review released new allegations of sexual misconduct involving a Moscow, Idaho masseuse. Things went from bad to ugly to even worse than that over the last couple of days for Gesser, who originally tried to fight what I think was getting off pretty easy on all this. It was only going to be sexual impropriety. And then he had to go out there and say, no, I'm totally innocent of all of this. And all of a sudden, the floodgates started to open. And you heard from his former babysitter. And now we're hearing from this masseuse in Moscow, Idaho. Beyond all of it is the possibility that, and you read it in the spokesman review today, that there are folks at Washington State who attempted to bury this. And Jack Thompson's name kind of comes up in that article. And all of that is not what you're looking for in this situation. So I'll say what I said the other day. Guys, and especially ex-athletes, when you're in the workplace especially, but really in general, I don't think respect should be too much to ask for.
The idea of behaving yourself and of not making advances upon... And look, Jason Gesser was in a role where he's soliciting donations. He's asking people to donate, and professionalism is required. And not that it was ever okay to have boys' club rules, but we're now, thankfully, living in a time where we're more vigilant about making sure that men behave appropriately. And you can't act that way. Yeah. And when you do, you're going to be called to account for it. And it's a reckoning. And it's a reckoning for men who have behaved badly and men who have been worse than just behaving badly and been actual aggressors in these sort of situations. The allegation about the masseuse is jarring when you realize that was a person doing a job who is essentially, she called police after it happened. Yep. That he exposed himself, he reached for her hand, she's just doing her job. She's just doing her job, and that's how she's being treated.
Well said. Danny O'Neill in for Brock today. Those are three things that you need to know. It's an ugly story, and I guess the only real positive in this is that, you know, he's lost his job now. But other than that, it's just sort of a mess from top to bottom.
Yeah, that part will make me sad when I think about that 5 years ago. This might not have resulted. He might have continued
absolutely
in the same. It's great that men are being called to be accountable for their actions. Should have happened years ago.
All right, you can hear the show on the 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, let's go through some of these levels of confusion with the Seahawks. Let's start with something Danny and I haven't addressed yet. So they lost Tom Johnson yesterday after releasing him prior to the game on Sunday in order to make room for Shalom Luani. He went to Minnesota. What happened?
Well, what happened, he was able to get back with a team right now that he thinks is probably going to go to the Super Bowl or has a good chance to go to the Super Bowl. They gambled in the sense that the deepest position they had on the team was defensive tackle. They knew that they had two tackles that they had inactive in week one, Nazir Jones and Puna Ford, that if they would have put out there, would have been claimed on waivers, so would have lost him. So they gambled that Tom Johnson would be okay on the idea of missing a week and then probably coming back. Unfortunately, it blew up in their face, and now he's gone, and they're thinner at the defensive tackle position.
How does the money work on that? Do they, because his was guaranteed, but he gets like $2 million from Minnesota. How does that work?
Well, the way it works is that, you know, he's got $950,000. Now, of course, he got the $900,000 signing bonus, which he kept, and $950,000 on his guaranteed base salary. So what he has to do before the end of the season is put in for termination pay. And so that means that he would get the remaining, about $863,000 that'll come off the Seahawks books and go to him.
Really? There's no offset?
I got to double check that. I mean, because I think there should be an offset, but this isn't like a regular base guaranteed contract that, like, for example, like in Corey Coleman, who had a guaranteed in Cleveland, and of course, then you go to another team and then you get the offset. I think in this case, you don't get the offset, but I got to double check that.
Yeah, let me ask you this, John. Did Tom Johnson screw the Seahawks? Did he promise to come back if they let him go and then decided to, like, a gentleman's agreement that he reneged on?
I don't know about that part. I think that, they come to him. And again, that's the gamble you take when you put a guy on, you terminate his contract, because then he can do it and feel whatever way he wants. I don't know if he did make any kind of promise. And of course, you know, he didn't have to make any kind of promise. They're the ones that put him on the termination list. And so now he decided to go someplace else. So I don't know if he reneged, because I would tend to think probably not.
Professor, we're going to hear from Pete Carroll at 12:30 today, but what do you anticipate? It sounds like K.J. Wright's going to play. I'll be interested to hear about Bobby Wagner, and then we got to wait and learn about Justin Britt, right?
Yeah, it sounds like they both can play. I think the biggest question mark right now is Justin Britt, because you don't know how bad the shoulder is. X-rays were negative, but you got to see with the MRI where it was. I mean, I saw him after the game. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but it didn't look too bad. But again, I think of the three players, that's probably the biggest question.
What about what Pete had to say yesterday? Do you now understand what happened with Chris Carson?
Absolutely not. I'm completely confused. Yeah, because the weird part is, I know when I talked to Chris last week, one of the things that he said is that in the very first play of the Denver game, he got tired because of the height and the heat and all that stuff. He said that first one tired him out, and it took him the whole game to kind of fight through it. But, you know, what, two special teams plays is going to tire him out on sea level? I don't get that. And I was confused the entire game what was being done with the running back position, because, you didn't see C.J. Procise out there in the normal role of being the pass catching back. I mean, they had Mike Davis at different times. They had Rashad Penny at different times. I mean, I'm that's probably the most confusing thing of what happened on Monday night, because they just didn't add up.
Antonio Brown, we saw there was a former PR staffer from the Steelers who tweeted out that Ben made AB who he is. AB responds on Twitter, Antonio Brown, by saying, "Trade me, let's find out." Then he doesn't show up at the facility on Monday. How thin is the ice there for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh?
Well, I mean, it's thin because they got to find out if they're going to suspend him or do something because he didn't show up and didn't tell the team about it. I know Drew Rosenhaus, who actually was at the game in Chicago, ended up tweeting or telling the team, oh, yeah, it was a personal thing that he had to attend to. But, of course, that wasn't backed up by Mike Tomlin. I mean, right now you can say the Steelers are about as big of a mess, maybe not as big as, say, the Buffalo Bills, but it's about the biggest mess in the league. You've got a running back, Le'Veon Bell, who is losing $853,000 a week because he's not happy being a franchise player and is more worried about next year. Now you have Antonio Brown, who, you know, put on his clothes after practice, took a shower pill, and bolted out of there so he wouldn't deal with the media, and he misses Monday. It's a mess.
Wow, that sounds nice for them. I'm glad that we're not dealing with that here.
Oh, yeah, there's no problems here.
No,
everything's good.
Everything's fine. Josh Gordon's been a mess. He's now going to go to New England. Will he fix himself and be fine?
Hard to tell. I mean, he's had so many different things that have gone wrong. You just don't know. And, you know, clearly the confusion over what happened on Friday still remains because, I mean, there was a team photo shoot, and he gets a hamstring injury. Now, the thing that's going to affect him once he gets there to New England is that I'm sure he's passed a physical because the trade's been approved, but is he going to be able to play? He had to go down to, I think, to Washington, D.C., and have a checkup on the hamstring. Hmm. So there's a lot more as far as question marks as far as his availability. But can he clean things up in New England? Questionable.
Justin Britt going to play this weekend?
Still don't know for sure, but I think that, you know, again, like I said a little earlier, that it didn't look too bad.
Okay.
But again, I don't know. I have not seen the MRI.
All right, let's do a wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
If you could have one Seahawk over to your house for a wonderful dinner, beginning with wine and a beautiful charcuterie platter, and culminating in a delicate roast duck before finishing the meal with a gently whipped mousse, who would you invite?
My guess would be probably Bobby Wagner, because I think that you can see that he probably would appreciate the wine, and I think that we'll see about the dessert and all that stuff. But I think, yeah, I mean, one thing you know about Bobby, very similar with K.J. Wright, who would also be under consideration, is that you know, he's going to be very nice about being over there, very appreciative, very talkative, all those different things. And again, I mean, so many of the guys that you would do it, I think the biggest thing I have to make assurance on is I don't do the cooking of it.
Right, obviously.
Yeah,
you couldn't gently whip the mousse.
I would say this. When Howdy said that, I saw Howdy with a whip and a mousse with a full rack of antlers. He was gently whipping the mousse.
Goodbye, John. Sorry to subject you to this. We'll see you tomorrow. There you go. John Clayton with us every morning at 7:15. His show will start at 10 o'clock. Better have enough food on hand for Bobby and KJ if that's who you want. I mean, those guys require a lot of food.
Those guys would be good guests.
I think so.
Very, very
Anybody
gracious.
Else you'd like to have over?
Well,
Puna?
I'd be interested. Puna would be a fun conversation.
I haven't talked to Puna yet. Have you? Have you guys met Puna?
I have not.
He hasn't been on Danny Day anymore.
We have not had him for our
Can
Seahawks
you guys make
spotlight.
That for... I'd like to hear him in a Seahawks spotlight soon and kind of hear what this guy's all about.
Yeah.
He's short. He's got long arms. He's played pretty well.
Yes.
Like, I want to see some Puna. I want to hear more.
His high school coach was a professional wrestler.
Really?
Yeah, which sounds like it'd be incredibly
Who
interesting.
Who was it? Killer Kowalski?
No, I didn't recognize the nickname because that was what I was looking for.
Sure.
But no.
You think he was one of those Joes who would just get thrown in to get beat up by somebody?
A jobber
that
would be there? It was in the story by Mike Varell over at the Times of Seattle that they were able to put that in. So I that's where I fished that detail.
All right, Danny. I've got a poll, and it's about Russell Wilson. And the results probably aren't that surprising, but they do show how the loud can differ from the many. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Four-man rush by the Bears. Russell steps up. Look out. Now he's going to go down. That's one that's got to come out. Nowhere to throw it, but Russell's got to just get rid of it. As he's starting to get swallowed up, he loses seven all the way back inside the five-yard line.
It was a whole half of that. A whole half of Russell being swallowed up. Swallowed whole, Danny. Like Jonah.
Jonah the whale?
That's the one. He just swallowed up and hanging out.
Yeah, same Jonah.
Huh?
Yeah, same Jonah. That's
same
the
one
he's talking about.
The one from the whale. And the Weezer song. The same thing. That Jonah. That was Russell. Just swallowed up by the pass rush at times on Monday night. And it leads to mass hysteria over a already polarizing guy in Russell Wilson. So what do you make of what's going on with Russ right now? We'll have the phone lines open on this really through about the next hour, 206-421-3776. And essentially, you got a very loud group of people that is saying Russell's the problem, Russell's bad, Russell stinks, this is all on Russ, this was always supposed to happen. And I'm trying to determine just how many of those people are actually out there, or whether I'm somewhat victim to the loud, especially the loud and anonymous, or the loud and somehow on Twitter who get, what's the word I'm looking for, empowered, the empowered loud. And so I asked just a Twitter poll yesterday on it.
I think there's a lunatic fringe that's really loud about how skilled he is and saying he's not good. I don't think anybody can watch Russell and have seen him play over the last 6 years and think that he's not that good.
Well, there's about 8% on the poll that think that. So just a quick poll says essentially, what do you think's going on with Russ? And your options are he's regressed and gotten worse. Something has happened to Russ. B, he's fine. And this is just sort of the ups and downs and everything is going to be okay. There's not a real problem with him. C, he was never that good, and he's now being exposed without Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin and all the other people that have carried him for years and years. Or D, there's an issue with the offensive scheme, and he and Brian Schottenheimer aren't meshing right now. Well, 69% of people, so about 7 out of 10 people, believe there's an issue with Brian Schottenheimer and the offensive scheme. But if you combine the regressed and gotten worse with the never that good exposed people, that's 25% out there who think that there is a significant problem right now with Russell Wilson. That's a lot. 25%, one out of four people, that's more than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's probably, where do you fall on it?
Danny, let's be clear. This is the original high priest of Wilsonism. This show is where Wilsonism got its name. I can't possibly say he was never that good, nor was he exposed. Clearly, there's some sort of a problem going on, because you just don't get sacked 6 times in a game and be on pace to set the record for sacks in an NFL season. So there's something going on with Russ. But I don't think he's regressed, and I don't think that he was never that good. So I've got to believe that there's a problem with the offensive scheme almost by default.
So they picked the wrong offensive coordinator when they changed from Daryl Bevel?
I don't know.
Because here's the thing that I look at, is that there is a thread that is running even in spite of the change of offensive coordinator. Something's going on with the way Russell plays or the way Russell is functioning within the players of this offense that transcends the one scheme. I went and looked. There's 4 games in his career in which the Seahawks have finished a game with fewer than 200 yards of total offense, which I would those are essentially no-shows. Mm-hmm. Like, it's essentially like games where, yes, where it does not look like an NFL offense. 2 of those came in December of 2017. So 2 of them came last year when things were bottoming out. We all saw it, and they couldn't run, and Russell was the leading rusher, and there was only 1 touchdown the team scored. There's something going on here that transcends one offensive coordinator and one offense that's being there. Now, maybe there are some growing pains that are going on for Russ and for the offensive coordinator as they learn each other. I think the bigger issue that's happening here is that the skills that a quarterback has to have his team remain successful after he gets a huge contract, when the resources become increasingly allocated to the quarterback, the skills that you have, Russell's still developing those. And that there is the skills of the difference maker when you have an elite defense and you just need to make some plays in the fourth quarter because you know the defense is good enough to keep you in every game.
Mm-hmm.
They're not at that spot right now.
So that's the Tom Brady story, right? Is that early in his career, he was just the guy who threw a whole bunch of screen passes and then at the end of the game found a way to win. And then about 2007 or so, so almost 5-6 years into his career, right around where Russell is now, Brady ascended to being one of the all-time great quarterbacks in terms of numbers as well. And your argument essentially is that it's time for him to take that next step and become that type of
We need to see growth from him there. And the thing that I'm worried about is that I'm not sure we've seen growth in that direction over the past year and a half.
They also haven't built the team that way. I mean, when Brady turned himself into that kind of a player, all of a sudden it was Randy Moss and you weren't throwing anymore. I mean, I was there, so I was watching a lot of this. You weren't throwing to Doug Gabriel and Rishay Caldwell like they were in the early years, Troy Brown. All of a sudden, it became, yeah, they've got Randy Moss here, and then they got Wes Welker, and they had some really great players who he was throwing to, and that changed the way that thing worked.
It did, but the Seahawks also had Jimmy Graham last year and Paul Richardson, and those things didn't work for their offense.
They're also not trying to run that kind of an offense, right? They're still trying to run the offense they ran at the early part of Russ, so maybe that's a scheme thing. The other thing I'll throw in here, and this is Brock's word, and he's going to join us at 8:30, but is trust. So Brock keeps throwing out the word trust, that Russ just simply doesn't trust all of the receivers out there. He's not taking chances when he doesn't have to because he doesn't trust a lot of new faces. As you were talking about those two games last year, it dawned on me that, look, we can get over that and say, okay, new year, new coordinator, on you go. That doesn't mean Russ has forgotten about those things. It doesn't mean that his memory just fades on how bad the running game, how bad the offensive line has been, how bad some of the receivers. Like, that doesn't just go out of his mind, and now all of a sudden he has a new lease on life and just goes out there and lets loose. That may not happen for a little while.
We've seen quarterbacks get scar tissue when they get hit a ton. David Carr is probably the best example of those have a toll. Look, Brock might be one of the best examples because Brock's junior year at the University of Washington, his offensive line wasn't nearly as good, and the clock in his head got affected by that. So I don't think that the slate was erased in the offseason. I think he's still trying to rebuild some of the faith and conviction that he had before things went sideways last year.
All the while learning a new offensive system and a new coordinator who may or not be any good. 206-421-3776. Grab Jacob, who's in Seattle. Hi, Jacob. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I think that it just seems like the past 2 weeks he hasn't even really attempted to scramble like we're so used to seeing him do. And I don't know if that is a big reason why the issues are coming up, but I think it might be. I also have a quick question for you guys. Do you think that Chris Carson's not getting all the time because they're trying to justify the Rashad Penny pick?
No. I honestly don't think that.
I've just never seen anything from Pete
that
would, or John Schneider. They've never been beholden to draft position.
No.
They've never done that. And if that was the case, if they were trying to hold up and justify the pick, Pete wouldn't have come out last week and said, hey, Chris Carson's going to be the main guy.
Yeah,
and Rashad Penny didn't look as decisive.
I honestly think Penny, I mean, they needed to play both guys in Denver. That thing really seemed to affect them, the altitude, or as John said, the height. And then, something happened. I don't know what it was, but it sure sounds like something must have occurred. It's an interesting idea on the league and on Russell just not feeling that confidence to scramble. And maybe they're just trying, you know, again, this is sort of the feeling out process with he and Schottenheimer. And if everything now is hold Russell accountable and Russell's got to be like everyone else, well, Russell's at his best when he just cuts loose and is Russell.
There are times when he's in the pocket that I'll sit and watch him and I can almost see him thinking, I'm supposed to stay in the pocket.
Uh-huh.
I'm supposed to stay in the pocket. I'm supposed to go through my progressions. And you can tell he's not really convicted about it, right? He knows he's supposed to be doing it. But it's not like he's doing it because that's what he
feels. That's a crisis of confidence. And by the way, would it be shocking if Russell was having a crisis of confidence right now? After the entire offseason has been about Brian Schottenheimer's going to hold this guy accountable. And then he gets an article that comes out a couple days before the season starts with a bunch of jerks talking about how Russell's bad and he needs to be held accountable and Pete loves him and this and that. If that was in his head and he was having a little crisis of confidence, I wouldn't blame the guy.
I wouldn't blame him, but I don't think that's what's going on either. Mm. I believe Russell is a cyborg, and the RW 3000 is not going to be prone to the crises of confidence of us mere mortals.
He might actually eventually, there might be a point at which you've said enough things about him, and where his teammates have said enough things about him, that maybe he starts to
be
think
like
a
tear
bit.
Going down Data from Star Trek The Next Generation.
All right, I got these phone lines totally full, and I want to get to the call. So if you guys can hang on just a couple of minutes, we're going to run through a quick Coors Light's Blue 42 with Danny, a couple good football questions, including a couple Husky questions, and then right back to these calls on Russell Wilson. 206-421-3776. Stick around. Be right back. It's Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for Coors Light's Blue 42. No Brock today. Danny O'Neill is in. I didn't even think I introduced you during the whole last segment. I hope people know who you are. It's Danny. I'm sorry if I didn't tell you. It's Danny O'Neill.
Wouldn't blame them if they didn't.
Some bad, bad hosting by this guy. Sorry about that, Danny.
No need for apologies, Mike.
Well, you're one of our Seahawks insiders around here. You are our number one Seahawks insider. So let's ask you some questions, starting with this one about the Huskies. Which player from the Washington Huskies team will be the highest draft pick when he enters the NFL?
It's tough to pick just one, only because their names sound so similar. Mike's totally right about that, Lydia. It's brutal to try and keep them all straight. To try and keep you figure out your difference between your Byron Murphy and your Miles Bryant.
Okay, those two, yes. You were saying like Jordan Miller?
Once you throw Miller and McIntosh with Murphy and Miles, it's kind of confusing.
It's like a law firm.
Yeah. It's not easy.
You also prefaced it by saying this was your fault. So
it might be. But then Danny backed me up, and now I think it's your fault.
Miles Gaskin's also thrown in there. There's a lot of Miles on the team and a lot of similar sounding names. Byron Murphy's going to be the top draft pick out of that group. Byron Murphy is a stud and an absolute baller, and I think that there's a decent chance that he is going to enter the draft after his sophomore season. I could see him being a first-round pick. The hit he put on Britton Covey, who Utah's quarterback seemed intent upon killing. Like, I thought the kid was going to leave the game, and I guess kid, they beat his hairline back about 5 years, where he was going to leave via homicide. But Byron Murphy is an elite-level corner.
Mm. Question number two. By the way, I've heard that Taylor Rapp could be a first-round pick.
Taylor Rapp's a great player, too.
He could be a first-round pick.
You could see it. Man, he's a baller,
that's
man.
That's what Heap said the last time he was here. And I was like, really? But that's what he said. Anyway, he'll be back in at 9 o'clock this morning. We'll talk more. Question number two for you, Danny, is this. Can Herm Edwards, who will be here Saturday with his ASU Sun Devils and Brock Heward on the call, can Herm succeed at Arizona State?
Yes, he can. And I'm loving watching, especially after the skepticism that was thrown his way and, oh, he doesn't really know football and, oh, this is a terrible hire. He doesn't understand recruiting and all of the different things. Kevin Sumlin, who was one of the hot hires in the country 5 years ago, he's at Arizona and they looked absolutely clueless, lost down 31 points to Houston. Chip Kelly currently has a mutiny on his hand with the father of his quarterback tweeting different things. Yeah, Herm can succeed. Yes. And I think that Herm is going to be a pretty convincing recruiter when he gets in the living room with people.
Are you rooting for him?
Yeah, I'd like to see him succeed. I think he's a good dude. And I think he's I think he's interesting for college football.
Are you rooting for him this weekend?
No, absolutely not.
Just checking. All
Grimace is going to be in the house ready to watch us stick it to Sparky.
Question number three. All right, we're not entirely sure what's going on with Justin Britt, but obviously he was injured in the game on Monday night.
He hurt his shoulder. Yeah, he got banged on the fumble. He went after the ball and got extended in a kind of a funky way there. So we got to see. I don't know the results. The X-rays were negative, so that's a good sign. He got MRIs today.
Danny, if Justin Britt can't play, what is your offensive line? And DJ Fluker does. What does your offensive line look like on Sunday?
Going to have Fluker at right guard, and then you're going to have Joey Hunt at center. I don't think you're moving Posick. Ethan Posick gives the team some flexibility, and if you wanted to stay extremely large, you could. But I think that you're going to make as few changes as possible on this group. You're going to actually try to build some continuity, and I think they've liked how Posick looks, especially playing next to Dwayne Brown. And you put Joey Hunt there, and Joey Hunt is known for his acumen, his ability to make the line calls, his ability to be in the right spot, even though he's going to look like a half man compared to all the other giants on their line.
That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. How do you think Ifedi's played?
I think he's played better than people think.
He certainly played better than last year.
Yeah, I would say B-. Yeah. Like, if you were going to look at it, like I don't think he's...
And last year he was a...
Last year he was a C- to a D.
He like, was a borderline F.
You were looking at... He was a liability.
When you included both the sacks, the whiffs, the problems, and the penalties, he was probably close to an F.
I just realized that I'm operating on grade inflation, though.
Right.
Like, do I think that... Is C an average? So C is your 18th to your 15th best offensive tackle. He's probably a C-, but I don't think he's replacement level. Like, I think that he's actually been
okay.
He's been functional.
Yeah.
He is not the reason your offense is stalling out the way it is.
How excited do you think Boy Howdy is for Joey Hunt to play on Sunday? I mean, this is his guy. They are as similarly built as two people could possibly be. When you see Joey Hunt out there, you just have to imagine Boy Howdy, and they walk with the same strut. It's amazing.
Now, do you feel like he's your alter ego with the long hair? Like, that could be you if you had pursued your dreams of being a rock and roll star?
Yeah, I feel like he's sort of like the superhero version of me. Like, the really, like, expanded abilities version of me.
Have you ever seen the long hair Boy Howdy pictures from back in the day? Oh, they're awesome.
How long was your hair?
About shoulder length.
No kidding.
Oh, dude.
Would you toss it around?
Yeah, I did like a little flip in a video that I made. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Oh, it actually looks pretty good. You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
It's like young, thin Howdy with this long hair. He's got kind of a rock star quality to him.
Yeah.
This was back in his playing children's music J days.
Yeah, you know. When you were the dinosaur. Roar!
That's
dinosaur,
right, roar!
All right, every week this year, we're giving away a couple tickets to every Seahawks home game. We do the Pete Carroll Show generally Mondays at 9:30. It was yesterday, of course. And then later in the day, we made a video, one of the highlights of that conversation with the coach. It was posted at 710sports.com/win. So you become eligible to win tickets just by watching that video. But here's the thing. You can gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram pages, or downloading our app, which, of course, is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Any of those things help your chances to win. Listen on Thursday this week. It normally would be tomorrow. We're going to do Thursday to give people an extra day. Thursday at 8:15, we will pick a random name of all – normally be today, excuse me. You can listen tomorrow at 8:15. We will give a random name of everyone who's entered the contest. That person will win, and we'll have 5 minutes to call in and redeem the prize. So go to 710sports.com/win, watch the video, and then we'll announce a winner tomorrow at 8:15. Pretty simple.
Very simple.
What did you think of Pete yesterday?
I thought that Pete was playing defense.
Yeah.
I thought Pete was trying to, and I give Pete credit because he does engage in the interview. Like, he doesn't just say, I'm not going to answer your questions. He talks about them. But I thought there was a lot of Pete filibustering and a lot of, it was more evasive than he usually
is. Well, like his team, he had to play defense because no one seemed to be interested in playing any offense. And that leads back to the quarterback and Russell Wilson. And you guys are all over the map. 206-421-3776. What is going on with Russell Wilson in this offense? Is it on Russ? Is it on the personnel around him? Is it on the new offensive coordinator and the scheme? What is happening to this Seahawks offense, and why has it looked so anemic through two games? We got our thoughts. You got yours. Next on Brock and Salk.